Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 28th, 2018. This is episode 1509. Enjoy. Oh, hi, welcome. How are you doing? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah. Yeah, you snuck up on me. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smartwatches. We've got all that jazz, augmented reality, you know, stuff with chips in it. 8888 Ask Leo is the number if you want to talk about high tech. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside the U.S., it's still toll free. You just use your Skype or some sort of voice over the internet solution, and you'll be able to get in. And it shouldn't cost you anything because it's a toll free number. Troll free is the phrase of the week because Twitter lost 1 million active users in the last quarter. And they said it's because we banned a lot of phony accounts. I myself lost 20,000. I think it was 20,000. Yeah, something like that. 25,000 followers. They were fake. They weren't real. Unfortunately, the stock market did not like this. Now you know why, by the way. Twitter's been so reluctant to ban trolls and bots and fake accounts from Russia and all of that because what happens is the numbers go down, and the Wall Street knocked them down 20% in their stock price as a result. Oh, man, they made $100 million this quarter. They were profitable. Doesn't matter. You don't have growth. We're at a very, you know, that's why I don't really pay much attention to the stock market. I mean, I have to mention it, I guess, but it doesn't seem to really be a reality-based. It's not based on whether a company's doing well or making money or serving the public or any of that stuff. Just growth. Growth at all costs, especially tech companies. And they got it. Man, did they have to grow. Even Facebook went down. Facebook isn't growing as fast. Well, they've run out of people, frankly. Mark Zuckerberg, it was the largest, I think, single day drop in for a tech company in market history, something like that. Again, I don't really care about stock price. But because Facebook said, well, we're not going to grow quite as much as fast. We're still growing. We still have 1.5 billion daily users. 1.5 billion, let that sink in, daily users. But it didn't grow as fast. So Wall Street punished it by $120 billion in stock drop. Mark Zuckerberg himself, I think, lost, what was it, some huge $20 billion in his personal, I know, I think it was more like $50 billion in his personal wealth. He has plenty to spare. Don't worry about it. He's going to be fine. You're not going to see him on the street panhandling. It's the biggest... was the biggest loss in market value by any company in the U.S. stock market after releasing its disastrous, don't you love it? Disastrous. we're growing. It's not that we're not growing, but we're not growing as fast as we thought. Oh, by the way, some other positive indicators. 91% of Facebook's revenue now comes from mobile advertising. That was a big concern. I don't know if you remember this. 2 years ago, so long ago, there was real concern whether Facebook, which made all of its money on the website, on advertising on the website, whether they could make the difficult transition to mobile as more and more users started to use their mobile devices instead of their desktop computers. Well, yes, they did make that transition. 91% from mobile. They did quite a good job, as a matter of fact. It is actually really a little telling that we are moving so rapidly from laptops and desktops to phones. I mean, that's dramatic. But it's impressive that Facebook could adjust to that. I think they did all right. Next largest loss, Intel. Back in 2000, they lost $90 billion when the dot-com bubble burst. Microsoft in 2000 lost $80 billion in one day. In 2013, Apple lost $59 billion. Exxon, $52 billion. It's just, you know, it's just numbers. And by the way, Facebook stock seems to be recovering just fine. Because what happens when you lose all that money in the stock market, when your value goes down? People go, oh, it's a deal. Let's go get some. Because you know what? I think Facebook's going to be all right. But they do have a little bit of a problem. Once everybody in the world uses Facebook, what do you do for growth? I mean, to me, that seems like, well, that's a good company. I think I'll take that. Maybe you won't grow much, but I think I'll take it. Everybody in the world uses you, and that's a problem. By the way, this is why one of Facebook's big initiatives is to get people in developing nations with poor internet infrastructure online. They call it internet.org, and they're going to put balloons up. They had this thing. They killed it. It was a drone plane that would fly around in circles and provide with internet. They called it, bad name, Aquila. This Aquila drone, they killed that project. But the idea was, let's get more people online because it's the only way we can grow. Did you see that? This kind of scares me a little bit, that Russia has penetrated the grid, our electric infrastructure, quite effectively. They've got malware. You see, you're worried about malware on your machine. Forget that. What if the power goes out and stays out for days? What do you think the country would be like if there were no power for days? Forget internet, nothing. Wouldn't that be a good way to attack a country? Well, you know, here's the good news. We now have our own cyber command with offensive capabilities. The next war is not going to be fought with tanks and guns. It's going to be fought on the internet. And you better believe the United States Cyber Command, which is now one of the 10 unified commands of the Department of Defense, has been elevated. It's not purely defensive. We've got offensive capability. Our hackers are better than your hackers. So watch it, Russia. Russia's been conveniently using Ukraine as their testing ground. They knocked the power out in Ukraine for just a few hours, but it's widely agreed. It's just a test to see, does this work? Yeah, it works. Okay, good. We'll keep that in the back pocket. I shouldn't talk about sad stuff. Let's talk about happy stuff. The Apple MacBook, very nice. I've had it for a week now. Everybody was complaining. It was overheating. You probably saw it. In fact, I was amazed at how a few YouTubers with kind of poorly formed tests could really scare people away from it. And I bet you Apple noticed. Monday, they put out a fix. They said, oh, whoops. There was a digital key that was inadvertently left out. Here it is. And boom, like that. All the new MacBook Pros with the i9 processors, boom, 4 gigahertz, solid. And if they get hot, they go down to, 3.5 gigahertz. Awesome performance. So they fixed it. But I bet you watch, people just going to have in their mind, you know, the YouTube stars who said, oh, no, this thing's too hot. One guy put it in a freezer. Do not put your computer in a freezer, okay? Bad idea. Now the reviewers are saying what I've been saying all along. This thing's mighty fast. It's mighty expensive, but if you need a lot of performance and you want portability, it's a good choice. But see, this is the problem, is the negative story persists. It's going to last forever. Hey, let's take a little time out. We're going to get you ready and get your calls on the horn here. We've got Kim Schaffer answering the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. We're going to take a break. Come back. take your calls. Talk high tech right after this. Oh, that's a good one. Did you see that Charter Spectrum got kicked out of New York? Oh, I should have told that. That's a good story. Oh, this will make you feel good. The entire state of New York said, you know, you guys suck. I mean, you wanted to do that with your cable provider. You guys suck. Get out of here. Your history, get out of here. That's gutsy. We wanted to do that to Comcast in Petaluma when I was on the city's digital committee, but no one had the will. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Handle me with care, Kim Schaffer. How are you today?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great.
Good.
I'm great. The entire nation is boiling away.
Or on fire.
But it's not too bad here. It's pleasant.
No, it's nice here.
Yeah. But I think it's
smoky.
I think it's going to get smoky and warm over the next week. So here we are. I'm actually don't think I have any phone calls.
None?
No, John, you better come in here and reboot my phone.
Oh, no.
This is really when you know we've gone too far down the tech road. My phone needs to be rebooted.
Yeah.
Here comes an engineer to reboot my phone.
We have a lot of people in the studio to talk to.
I could just have them. I have the largest studio audience we've ever had.
How many are in there? Like 10?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Two engineers and me. That's 9 people in a room the size of a closet.
Getting a little stuffy?
Yeah. No, it's fine. We have smoke. We have AC. We have a molecule air filter. We're good. Okay, it's rebooting. Why do we have to reboot the phones?
Because it's digital now.
What is this? Is crazy. Have you ever gotten the blue screen of death on your television? I have. Have to reboot your TV, or you're in the This happened to me the other day. I was in the middle of the show, and my LG WebOS based TV said, "Oh, we're downloading an update. We're going to reboot." It's like, do we have to have a computer in everything? There we go. It's working. The reboot fixed it. What a crazy world we live in. It looks like we have a bunch of calls. Who should I start with here?
That's why I was surprised when you said we have no calls.
I have no calls. I don't know what to do.
How about James in Connecticut? He's a disabled vet and just wants to know what kind of tech might help him in his daily life.
Oh, that's great.
It's a very interesting question.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Kim. And hello to James. Thank you for your service. I'm sorry about your disability, but let's see what we can do to help.
How are you, Mr. President?
I'm not your president, I'm sorry to say. I'm only the president of the internet, but that's okay, I'll take it.
But at any rate, sir, please pardon me if I have a bit of a tough time communicating. I have disability symptoms from brain damage and frontal lobe brain damage and PTSD.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you, but they're just really beginning to really interfere and impact my life. They're degrading.
Oh, dear.
I'm at the point where I'm starting to depend on recording devices because I have a very difficult time processing memory, both incoming and outgoing. So the issues become, impromptu recordings are needed. And there's, of course, a concern of the quality of the audio, but there are also every means of communication is impacted with me. So I'm listening, watching, speech. You may, for example, begin to hear me either slur or stutter. That means that I should probably just slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, I've been in tech forever. You're probably sick of seeing me online. I'm usually sending you Steve and the others stories. You might recognize me as F-stop, EFF.
Oh, it's so nice to meet you. Of course. So clearly you've already kind of become aware of how computing can continue to keep your access to the world alive, right? I mean, that's obvious.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the good news is, and this is, of course, one of the things that I think all technology companies understand is that they call it assistive technologies, the ability to use computers and other electronic technologies to help people with various disabilities. And of course, everybody has a unique set of disabilities. Even supposedly able people have a unique set of disabilities. And sure. Technology can really be used to assist. Voice technologies these days, like the Amazon Echo and the Google Home, I know help a lot of people, blind people particularly. Your computer can be configured to help you. And, of course, if you have mobility issues, when we've seen it, people like Stephen Hawking use a computer not only to compute but actually to communicate. His voice for the last few decades of his life was computerized, and that's an amazing thing. The good news is, the VA, Veterans Affairs, has a technology website that might be of great interest to you. It's vaatech.org. It's Veterans Affairs Assistive Technology, vaatech.org. And there they list a lot of equipment. They let you connect with your VA in your neighborhood, and they tell you the kinds of things you can get, everything from mobility assistance, adapted computer access, they have something called, which I think would be what you're talking about, electronic aids to daily living, augmentative and alternative communication, electronic cognitive devices, specifically for the kinds of issues you might be experiencing, memory and so forth. They also have adapted automotive equipment. They're really, and recreation equipment, they really have done a great job. There's a news feed on the front page. There's a lot of information, but most importantly, I think for you, a resources page where you can find help, connect with the VA who would underwrite anything that you needed, because this stuff can be very expensive. And of course, the irony of it all is as your disability advances, it becomes more and more difficult for you to make a living, and you need more help, and of course it gets more expensive. So VA, I think for you, and I'm really pleased to meet you, vaatech.org, and please continue to email and write and stay in touch, because the good news is I really do believe that technology can help keep you in this world, part of this world, and help with things like memory issues. Helps me with memory issues all the time. I don't know how I did this show without Google. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll take a break. Then Scott Wilkinson talks home theater right after this. Thanks for your service, sir. I got to put the TV in cinema mode. It was in dynamic mode because Scott Wilkinson is here. He's the home theater guy, and he wouldn't allow me to have such a bright LCD. Good morning, Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. Editor at avsforum.com. He joins us every week to talk about TV.
Yes, and I'm so glad you put that TV back in movie mode.
No one should watch a TV in display or just dynamic mode. That's horrible.
Well, it's interesting that you should mention that, because in the chat room this very day,
yes,
there was somebody who said, you know what, I tried movie mode. It took me a while, but I finally got used to it.
It is. It looks dimmer at first.
It looks weird at first.
Yeah.
Another person in the chat room chimed in and said, you know what? I prefer dynamic mode. And I said, I responded in the chat room. I said,
you savage.
No, I said, hey, if that's what you really like, then more power to you. Go for it.
No, you're wrong. That's the wrong answer. The right answer is, you are a savage, my friend. So,
I also said, you're just not seeing it the way the content creator intended. You just have to keep that in mind.
Well, you always want to do what the creator says.
Well, when it comes to watching TV and watching movies.
Watch more movies, Leo. This is well known, and it actually predates, home theater. Computer users like their screens too bright. And they're often running their screens very bright.
And probably very blue.
Yeah. And as a result, you get used to it. Of course you get used to it. And then you say, I prefer it because I'm used to it.
Right.
Just as
right.
if you put chili sauce on everything you ate,
right.
you would say, well, I can't eat this bland food.
Right.
But honestly, it is. There's a number of reasons you don't want to watch it so bright. Of course, I like the creative argument you give, mm-hmm. which is, well, this is what the creator intended. But also, it's certainly on a computer, it's bad for the screen. It wears out your battery faster. It really impacts battery life.
So and in terms you're of not a portable screen, yeah.
Yeah, and you're not seeing the detail that you would see otherwise.
That's right. You're probably getting blooming on the screen.
That's right.
Which obscures detail. The same thing is true on TVs. If you watch them super bright, they'll be more tendency to bloom, to bright spots to kind of expand out and obscure other things. You're also going to wear out, certainly on an OLED, that's really not a good idea because you're going to wear or age the OLED material faster. LCDs, it's not quite so much of a problem because there isn't really anything to age.
They're just shutters, those crystals. And the bright tube behind it, the LEDs behind it, probably don't wear out that much faster if they're bright. On the other hand, your eyes might wear out.
Well, that's another thing, though. With a TV, you're sitting typically, 9, 10 feet away?
Yeah.
With a computer screen, you're sitting 1 or 2 feet away.
Yeah.
And that could, in fact, impact your vision to some degree. I don't know
Keep
exactly.
Keep you up later at night, too.
We know that light. Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
Inhibits melatonin production. The reason I was thinking about this, we were watching a movie last night, Lisa and I, and a friend came over. And she sat down on our couch. She said, "You're so close. Why are you so close to the TV? Like my mom, you'll ruin your eyes.
You'll go blind."
She said, "How big is that TV? Is it?" I said, "No, this is the proper viewing distance." Mm-hmm. What is the proper viewing distance anyway?
Well,
give me some ammunition.
There's much debate about that. I generally say it depends also on the resolution. You've got a 4K TV.
I do, and I want to sit close because I want to see the detail.
You want to see all the detail, and you want it to be immersive. The closer you sit to a given size, the more of your field of view the screen takes up.
And by the way, and maybe this impacts the initial conversation about brightness, we turn out all the lights. We sit in a dark room.
Mm-hmm. Another reason, and if you do that, dynamic mode is definitely not the way to go.
You'll hurt your eyes. Now,
you will.
I do remember the advice back in the day. I don't know where I read this, probably Reader's Digest, that you have a light on in the room. You shouldn't just watch TV in the dark.
In the total darkness. And that's actually true.
Really? Why is that?
Yep, it is. Because your eyes adjust to the amount of light that's coming in. Like when you go in from a bright daylight outside into a dark theater, you can't see everything for a little while. Your eyes take a minute to adjust or acclimate.
Yeah.
So that happens with the TV too. But if you put and putting a light on in the room, the ideal way to do it is a very specific thing called a bias light, which is a sort of a long tube light like a fluorescent bulb or LEDs now. Put it behind the TV and set it to produce a little bit of light that biases the eye's acclimation into the same range where the TV normally is. You get less eye strain, and it's much more comfortable viewing experience.
Now I have something, and I don't know if this is a good idea, but Hue makes these kind of weird dome lights. They're actually battery powered, but I keep them plugged in that are kind of like ambient lights. I'm trying to find the name for them, but they I have them behind the TV, and
that's good.
And
that's
so
good.
It does kind of it casts a glow on the wall behind the TV.
Now the question is, can you adjust the color of white?
And what color should I make it?
Okay,
I can.
You can. Good.
Oh, yeah, it's Hue. All those Hue bulbs. Well, there's some white bulbs, but
yeah. Exactly.
They're what we call RGB LEDs, so I can do almost, I think, on any color in the rainbow.
Well, you want it to be a very specific color of white. Technically, that color of white is called D65. And whether or not, I don't know the Hue app particularly, but how you could find D65. Your TV, your OLED you're talking about, is calibrated, right? I mean, I did it.
Yes, you know it's calibrated. Although I do remember calibrated. You said it didn't really need much. It was pretty accurate.
It didn't. That's right. So the best way to do it by eye would be to display something that's a reference white on the screen. And I don't know if you have any of the
I do have the reference DVDs, yes.
Reference DVDs. So they will have a reference white pattern.
Okay.
Put that white pattern up.
Yeah.
And then adjust the color of the hue light to match that white as much as possible.
Just by eye? Just by my eye.
Well, I mean, ideally you would use a meter, but I don't know if you have a...
No.
A colorimeter handy.
Yes.
So to just do it by eye, as long as your TV's calibrated, you can get relatively close.
So behind the TV, I'm trying to remember, I think the wall probably isn't pure white, so that's going to give a color cast to it. I do need to do this by eye because I'll need to slowly change. These are the Hue Go lights. They're kind of, it's in a kind of translucent plastic container. I think they're just supposed to be ambient lighting, right?
Right.
So
right.
I'll play with the slider till it looks the same as on the screen. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I have these sconce lights behind it that flicker like a flame, but I shouldn't use those.
No. You should not use those.
Okay.
No.
Although it's very cool. I feel like I'm in a dungeon. Maybe only when I watch horror movies I'll have those.
Yeah,
on.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Now, if somebody wants to get a real bias light, there's a company called CinemaQuest, and you just Google that, look it up. They sell real bias lights. Not too expensive, $30-$40, something like that. But what you're doing, I think, is – and they're the right color white automatically, just out of the box. What you have to do is you have to kind of adjust yours to get them close to the right color of white. Once you do that, then you've biased your eyes into the right dynamic range so that you get much less eye fatigue when watching TV in an otherwise darkened room.
We'll put a link in the show notes. Hue actually has an article on this.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, huehomelighting.com. What bias lighting guide and why you should be using it.
Oh, I should go look at that myself. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, I got the Hues just, you know.
Just because they're cool.
Well, yeah, I have a little my Amazon Echo, I say. It's boom, boom time, and the lights go down, the music comes up, but that's another story for another day. Thank you, Scott Wilkinson, avsforum.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I hope that's not too adult for our family audience. Mommy, what's boom boom time? Oh, he's a drummer. He's a drummer. It's all right. Don't mind. Don't mind him. All right, let me get
we'll get my clock up there.
Your settings and all that, and you can take her over.
I appreciate that. Always.
How's life in the Wilkinson household?
Oh, life in the Wilkinson household's very good.
Good.
Pretty hot down here, but
You guys are getting some real.
Oh man, last week it was well over 100 every day.
Yikes!
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be really hot this week in Petaluma. But we're going to Tahoe to get an escape the heat.
Ah, very good. Yeah. Very good. Unfortunately, we're not taking a summer vacation because Joanna's got to work some extra days at the hospital to cover for a colleague, so we're not going to be.
I don't like to take summer vacations generally because that's when everybody else is taking them vacation.
Well, that's true.
So if you don't have
kids, exactly right.
Take them in when the kids are in school, like in the. So we kind of do spring and fall. For us, the best time to travel. Speaking of which, I mentioned I'm going to be gone. Right? Did I give you those dates? Okay.
Yeah. I think pre-records on August 19th.
Okay. Good. You're all set for that. Good. All right, I will let you have the con.
Thank you so much.
The next 3 minutes, that's all you get.
So thank you. I shall do that. Hey, everybody, nice to see you. And thanks to those who were talking about dynamic mode and cinema mode. I'm not sure I can remember who they are. Oh, I am Special UK. Got used to cinema mode. You do get used to it, and it's more comfortable, in my opinion, than dynamic mode. But somebody else, Maverick 56, really likes dynamic mode. Okay, that's fine. I would suggest a bias light's probably even more important there because you've got more light coming off the TV, just for your comfort, eye comfort. But hey, if you prefer it, that's fine. As I said in my segment, though, just be aware that you're not seeing it the way the content creator, the director, the colorist, the director of photography. It's not what they envisioned with their art. I guess it's like going to, how could you, what would be a good analogy? Maybe going to a museum, looking at a painting, and the painting has a color cast on it somehow. Maybe somebody put a, you know, a piece of cellophane over it with that had a color cast to it. And that's what you're looking at. And, okay, if you like that, fine. But I still say better to do, to look at what the creator really intended. And I don't mean that in any religious sense, of course. anyway, Mike B. is watching us on in dynamic mode on his TV right now. Yes, I admit I like it very bright and with blue popping off the screen. No blooming and plenty of detail. I've tried movie mode for a long time. There's a lot of detail loss. I find that hard to believe. In fact, as Leo and I were talking about, in dynamic mode, you can lose detail from what's called blooming because there's so much light coming off the TV that it kind of washes over into adjacent pixels. So that's pretty hard to understand, but okay. Shortwave is starting to think about upgrading his 2010 Sony Bravia, I assume him. Pardon me if I'm wrong. Probably overdue for an upgrade. 2010, 8-year-old TV. Yeah, I'd say it's probably a good idea. Maybe we'll talk about that in the next segment.
You're going to stick around for the top of the hour.
Happy to.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you in a minute.
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number if you want to talk high tech. Line 3, Paula, Studio City, California. Hi, Paula.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
I was in the middle of the Carbonite free trial, and I was getting organized and understanding the dots and contemplating buying. And all of a sudden, Dell and Microsoft both took over the overlays on what was on my desktop, all the folders and
files. So you
files.
Can't tell what's backed up now.
And obscured the Carbonite dots.
How frustrating is that?
Oh, it just made a mess out of my desktop. So I called the tech advisor, and he explained it. He couldn't fix it, but he explained that it's very competitive, the backup. And he opened a log, and that's how he found out that Microsoft through OneDrive was one of the...
Oh, yeah. And, of course, it's Microsoft's operating system, so they're going to win.
And Dell, with its Dell backup, was also simultaneously fighting for my attention. So he couldn't really fix it.
Well, you can fix it. You can fix it. I don't know why he couldn't fix it. He may be told, don't uninstall those things. But you don't have to. If you wanted to use, see, he can't fix it if you say, well, but I want to use OneDrive and I want to use the Dell backup. Then he can't fix it. I would ignore the Dell backup. Just disable that.
Well, I did that because it was in my system tray. I was able to and close out.
It'll restart though every time you restart the computer, probably. So you have to tell it don't log in at startup.
Well, a few hours later, all of that disappeared and the dots came back.
The Dell dots or the Carbonite dots?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which.
It came, the Dell dots, the Carbonite dots came back.
Yes, good.
So the whole thing started unbeckoned.
Just understand, the dots aren't actually functional. You're still getting backed up. The dots are just there to tell you, you know, the status of the backup. And if you go into the settings, you can disable it. There's a checkbox. You can re-enable it. And they even say themselves, you know, Windows only allows 15 entries for icon overlays. 15, count them. 15. They said when Microsoft, that should be enough for anybody. But there are sometimes competing overlays. But it's just an overlay on the icon. It's not really, it'll still function whether you see the dots or not. One other choice you'd have is to say to Microsoft,
that it was, the tech guy assured me it was backed up.
It has nothing to do with that. It's just, it's a convenience to indicate that it's been backed up.
Yeah.
You can, but all of these programs should have, I'm sure OneDrive does as well, the ability to turn off the icon overlays. The problem is that it's not immediately obvious where that is in the settings. You have to comb through the settings, and the nomenclature may vary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you, that's why I'm surprised. Maybe he just didn't want to mess with some other company's software. What they really don't, you know, if you put yourself in their shoes, the worst thing they could do is mess up your backup. So they don't want to tell you, oh, well, don't use that or don't use that, because then if you lose data, guess who's liable?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, because you're not going to sue me, right? I'll tell you. you know, of course, be very careful about backup. In fact, I recommend not only having Carbonite, but having another method, probably a local method. I like having both local and offsite backup. You want to have, this is the rule of thumb that I've always said, 3 copies of everything. And that could be the original plus 2 backups. The problem is sometimes people say, well, I'm backed up, and they delete the original, which means you only have 1 copy, which means you don't have a backup. So 3 copies at all times. And then what I really like is one of them offsite with Carbonite or OneDrive or Dell. Those are all 3 offsite backups. They're backing them up to the cloud. Dell's the one I would say don't use. They're the least likely to kind of do it right. OneDrive is very good for Microsoft. But you pay for that.
They have ugly overlays.
Oh, well, you can't. You can probably turn off the overlays. That's probably the solution, just turn off the overlays.
Well, I poked around and disabled and turned off what I could of Microsoft and Dell. And then hours later, it just all disappeared and everything. And so far, so good.
Good. You must have figured it out. You did better than the Carbonite guy. Figuring it out. They do. I have to give them kudos. Oh, and I didn't mention, but I should. The Carbonite is a sponsor, which is probably why you use them. Kudos to them, because for a while, some years ago, they offshored their support to India or somewhere like that. And it really went downhill. And the CEO at the time was an old friend. He's not the CEO anymore. He's just on the board. But he's kind of semi-retired. But he decided, you know, we really should have tech support in the U.S. And so they moved their tech support back to the U.S. And I think it's become a lot better. So I'm glad that he was there.
He was very helpful.
Yeah.
Because he identified the problem.
He knew immediately.
He opened this log.
Oh, good.
In the registry. And that's how we at least knew where the problem was.
And by the way, another good thing you did, which is you made sure you called the Carbonite number. You didn't just Google and get some random support guy, or worse yet, take a number that had popped up on your screen. People got to be very, very careful about that. But you talked to the real guy.
And, I did, and he was indeed helpful, and ultimately it got solved.
So, yeah, that is a known issue. I mean, everybody... It actually is worse on mobile devices now, because screen real estate is the best place. You probably noticed when you got your Windows machine, a bunch of icons for stuff you didn't install, you didn't want, trialware, sometimes they call it, crapware, sometimes we call it. All of that, screen real estate is very valuable. You see it every day, you see it all the time. It's basically an advertisement. They really want to put stuff in your face. So they're all competing to get those icon overlays. That's one way they can remind you what a great job they're doing. And so you don't have to have the icon overlays. That's just a convenience. You can if you can disable them in the settings, I would. I wouldn't bother with the Dell backup. If you've got OneDrive and Carbonite, you're pretty golden. But then the next thing, I would just get an external hard drive and backup periodically to an external
hard drive. Right, I do.
You're right on. You got it. You got it down.
Now if I created it, I want to keep it.
Right. And actually, that's the real rule of backup, is only backup the stuff you made. Everything else you can get somewhere else, right?
Right.
But your art, your drawings, your writing, your spreadsheets, whatever it is you do, those are the things you want to back up. Paula, well, I'm glad it worked out for you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a great day. I have a minute before the news at the top of the hour. Let's see if we can get started with Manny in Mount Carmel, PA. Hello, Manny.
Hello, Leo. How you doing, bud?
I'm wonderful. How you?
Oh, pretty good. First of all, let me thank you for the advice you gave me a few months ago. on the VPNs.
Which one did you end up with?
NORD, Nord.
NordVPN's very good, yeah.
I have that, and I also got the tiny hardware firewall.
Oh, how do you like that?
I love it. I love it. I looked at one of your old screensavers there, and I was very interested.
Now, you don't need both. One,
I don't. I use some because of my access to the truck stop. Sometimes I have a little trouble connecting, so I'll just use the NordVPN.
Got it. Manny, we got to take a little break. Hang on. Thank you for that testimonial, and we'll answer your question right after this. No. All right, Scott, you're in the driver's seat here.
Woo-hoo.
Let me flip over.
Watch out. I'll try not to crash the car.
All right.
500 seconds. Fantastic. Hey, everybody. We've been doing a sprightly discussion in here about OLED TVs. And somebody originally asked the question whether the LG OLED or the Samsung QLED is better. And it's interesting because I'm working now on an article that will discuss that particular issue exactly. And the answer really is, it depends. Of course, when is the answer not? It depends. First of all, I think Twisted Mister made a good point in making sure that everybody understands that QLED, Samsung's QLED, when you look at it written down, it looks an awful lot like OLED. And this was a marketing move by Samsung, in my opinion, to make it look like OLED, because everybody says, oh, OLED's so great. So look, we've got QLED. QLED is simply an LCD TV with a fancy backlight, as Twisted Mister so eloquently put it. The Q in QLED stands for quantum dots, and we've talked about quantum dots on the show before. They are microscopic, nanoscale spheres of semiconductor material, special semiconductor material, that when they're hit with blue light, they absorb, say, a blue photon, they will get some energy, and then they will re-emit a photon of a lower energy, and the energy and wavelength or color are directly related. So a blue photon comes in and a lower energy photon comes out, and the actual specific energy of the photon that comes out depends on the size of the quantum dot. So I honestly can't remember right now whether larger quantum dots give lower energy output. I don't remember that. But at a certain size, you'll get a green photon out. And in another size, you'll get a red photon out. So QLED TVs basically have blue LEDs in their backlight with a sheet of quantum dots just randomly embedded in a sheet of plastic. And they have two different sizes. One of them emits green when hit by blue, and one of them emits red when hit by blue. And so when you combine those red and green photons coming out of the quantum dots with the blue photons that don't happen to hit a quantum dot, that pass through that film without striking one, and there are plenty of them that do, you combine those three together, you get white. And the white backlight, this is kind of weird, I know, but it's how it works. The white backlight then passes through the LCD shutters, which Leo and I were talking about a minute ago, that let more or less of it through to make a bright or a dim pixel. And then that white light passes through red, green, and blue color filters, which sort of reconstitutes the red, blue, and green coming off the screen, and you finally get to see a picture, a full color picture. So that's how they work. Now, quantum dots offer a number of advantages. For one thing, a TV that uses them can be brighter than a TV that doesn't. And this is one of the advantages of LCD or LED TVs generally. And QLED, QLED is better at this than anything else. They are much brighter than OLED. So if you need a super bright TV, then you need a QLED. over an OLED. But like all LCD TVs, QLEDs have some disadvantages. One is off-axis performance. So if you sit right in the middle of your screen and you're watching the screen dead on, your eyes are perpendicular to the plane of the screen, looks great. If you move off axis, as say if you have a large family or a large gathering, a Super Bowl game, party, whatever, and some of your people are off to the side, the picture looks terrible, particularly in the Samsung QLEDs, which use a type of LCD panel called VA for vertically aligned. Those suffer worse from off-axis performance than the type of LCD panel that's used in LG LCD TVs, which is called IPS, in-plane switching. It's a description of how the LCDs actually work. When you go off-axis from an IPS panel, the degradation of the image isn't as bad. It's still there for sure, but it's not as bad. The advantage of the VA panel has greater native contrast. It gets deeper blacks natively. So, you know, there's a trade-off there. But in any event, between the OLED and the QLED, QLED's going to be brighter. OLED's going to have essentially perfect off-axis performance. OLED does have some image retention potential. QLED does not. No LCD does, for the most part, essentially. OLED will get deeper black than QLED. QLED will get a deep black, but it's not as deep as OLED. So, as I say, I'm writing an article about this. It'll appear hopefully Monday or maybe Tuesday if I'm not lucky. and it sort of goes back and forth about this. You know, which one you should get depends on your circumstance. If you're in a super bright environment, that you're watching TV in, maybe the QLED would be better. If you can control the ambient light to some degree, an OLED might be better. I certainly don't think you have to watch in a completely darkened room, bias light notwithstanding, what we talked about during the show segment. You know, I think an OLED works fine. And if you have a large group, it works fine. It depends on what your preferences, what are the important parameters to you? Let's put it that way. Interestingly, the 65-inch Q9FN, which is the Samsung flagship, lists for, I think it's $3,800 bucks, and the 65-inch LG C8 OLED lists for exactly the same amount. Now, on their website, the Samsung has a promo price, which I don't know how long that'll last, but the promo price of $3,000, and the LG is $3,500. So if you buy it directly from Samsung, you'll get a better deal on the QLED. So that's one thing in its favor. anyway, that's sort of the long and short of that. Lumpy, I did not see Mission Impossible. I had a bunch of other stuff going on, and I just was a little tired of bombast, shall we say, which I'm sure that one is tremendous. Now, it's been getting great reviews, and so I probably will go see it, but I didn't race out to see it on the first night, as I often do with such things. Don't know how to say that screen name. Old Vizio's having problem with the IR on the TV, not the remote. What should I do? I got your email on that, and I'm actually researching it. So stay tuned. I might have an answer for you. It's a very odd problem that I've never heard of.
Thank you so much, Mr. Wilkinson.
My pleasure.
Have
See you
a
next
wonderful week.
Week.
All right.
Thanks. You
too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We got smart watches. We got all that jazz. And if you'd like to talk about it, all you have to do is call me. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We were talking before the break with Manny. He's in Mount Carmel, PA. We were talking about Manny had gone out and subscribed to two VPNs. One was a software-based called NordVPN, very well known, And then you've noted that I've mentioned several times a hardware-based solution called the Tiny Hardware Firewall. And it's actually from a company called Wi-Fi Consulting. And they have their own hotspot VPN that they use. And they also have the so-called Black Hole Cloud. And the way Black Hole Cloud is kind of a unique solution, because each user has their own virtual VPN server, so you have dedicated access to it. But the difference is NordVPN is good for, and other VPNs are good for, appearing to come from different countries. So sometimes people want to get around geographic restrictions on content, and so they want to appear in some other country. The Tiny Hardware Firewall is, I think you've probably deduced, you don't get to choose where you're coming from, and I think it's always in the U.S. So it's not good for that kind of thing. But what else did you want? Is that right, Manny? I think that's the case.
Yeah, that is the case. For me, I love it. I can also go onto the other router there, the Onion router.
So you can use that VPN as well. And Tor is built into the hardware. There's also hardware-based ad blocking built into it. So yeah, but the nice thing about hardware, there is an advantage to using hardware as opposed to software VPN. If you're using a software VPN, you're still exposed. Your machine, the Wi-Fi on the computer you're using is the one that the bad guy would see. And there are things, believe it or not, even when you're using a VPN, a bad guy can do if your machine is on the network. By using effectively a router, a travel router, that's what the Tiny Hardware Firewall is, that's what's exposed to the internet, and the bad guy can't even see your machine. So one trick, it's an interesting trick, and the device that lets you do this, one of them anyway, one that's widely available to hackers and just malicious types, is called the Hardware Pineapple or the Wi-Fi Pineapple. It's about $100. And what it lets you do, among other things, you can sit down in a coffee shop. You can see all of the devices on the network because you're on the same network, even if they're using a VPN. And in some cases, you can impersonate the home Wi-Fi of that laptop. So I can say, oh, let me look at Manny's laptop. All right, the name of his home Wi-Fi is Zigga Zigga. So what I'm going to do on my Wi-Fi Pineapple is impersonate that Wi-Fi access spot. Your laptop is trained. It's well behaved. It says, oh, yeah, I'm home. Huh. Good news. I'm home. I see a very strong Wi-Fi access point. I'm going to join the home router. It does. And now everything you do is going through the bad guy. Now, if you're on a VPN, you're probably okay. But that does make it possible to do something called a man-in-the-middle attack, where the bad guy's getting in the middle between you and the outside world. That's fairly risky. So there are things that having a hardware firewall, you know, probably will be more secure. That, you know, the advice generally that the Tiny Hardware Firewall people use is connect to this by Ethernet so that you don't – and then turn off your Wi-Fi radio so you're not even visible. You don't even exist to the hacker. That machine is not available. And that's probably good advice. If you're a spy, if you really want privacy. What can I do for you, Manny?
I heard about the specs last week that you were talking about on the Mac Pro, and yeah, on the top of the hour there, you were also talking about it. I have a 2013 Mac Pro, a 2.7 gig processor, i7 core, 16 gigabytes of RAM and all that. And I love my Mac Pro, especially the function keys. Now, with the new Mac Pros out there, they don't have that feature, right? They have that
touch bar.
And you don't see Apple putting that back in anytime soon?
Well, they have a MacBook Pro without the touch bar. Sometimes people call it the MacBook Pro Escape because it has a physical escape key, and you escape from the touch bar. But they did not update that. So that has last year's specs. Apple is very adept at frustrating its customers, I have to say, at this point.
Yep.
And, you know, to be fair to Apple, they're the only company that can make Macintosh hardware. So they can, and they don't want to make 100 different models. That was a pitfall they fell into back in the bad old days when Steve Jobs was gone. And they don't want to get back into that. They want to make a narrow line of products. But that's going to disappoint some people. And what's all the more disappointing is you can't then just go to someone else and get a Mac laptop. You have to only get the models they make, and they make a limited number of models. So I've kind of bit the bullet. I got the i9 MacBook Pro 15-incher with the touch bar. And I really love the speed of this computer. It is noticeably faster. Apple's claiming, in some cases, 70% faster than the comparable model, but from last year. But there's a couple of things I would say. One is I hated the keyboard. It is a little bit better. They put a little silicone barrier to keep crumbs out, and that actually dampens the hit of the keyboard, which was a little hard for me. Apple says it makes it quieter. I feel like it's a little more comfortable. I think I can live with that. And there is a software. The problem with the touch bar, it's not necessarily a bad idea if applications support it, but nobody does. So the promise that's there is not fulfilled. However, there is a very nice program, it's $20, called Better Touch Tool, that lets you use the touch bar for a lot of different stuff. And I think that makes the touch bar pretty interesting. I have problems in general with the philosophy of the touch bar. It feels like Apple says, well, we just don't want to do touch on a Macintosh, even though in the Windows world, touch is everywhere. We don't want to do it on the Macintosh because we want you to get our iOS products. Those are designed from the ground up to be touch. So instead of doing that, we're going to give you this touch bar, which is really just a little screen the size of the function row key. And we'll let you touch that. But it's not the same, Apple. And you have to look down and look at it. And if you're a touch typist, you've been trained not to look at the keyboard. That's the whole point. You don't have to. You can type. Now, all of a sudden, they have something on the keyboard that you have to look at because it changes all the time. It's different for every program. It's different depending on what you're doing. That's frustrating.
A bit of a distraction.
And if you're a programmer and you use the escape key, a physical escape key is pretty important for a lot of programmers. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have a physical escape key. So in many ways, Apple hardware disappoints. However, I'm going to keep this one. I did send back the last MacBook Pro, the 2017 MacBook Pro, because I couldn't bear the keyboard and the touch bar. But I'm going to keep this one because the speed is remarkable. And with Apple's patch on Monday, they solved the throttling problems that people were reporting. For the things I do, including photography with Lightroom, which is notoriously slow, I do a lot of programming. For the things I do, it is lightning quick. And, you know, my wife, who's on the fence, she has an old MacBook, which is very slow. She's on the fence. She said, give me an account on your computer. Let me try it. She was using it all last night, much to my dismay. She says, we're going to the Apple store today. She wants one. Because she likes speed. She doesn't want to wait around. And it really is noticeably faster. So I think I can safely recommend it. You may not want the i9, unless you really know you need that speed. Get the i5 or the i7.
Okay. Because the reason I bought the high-end Mac back in 2013 is because programs and everything, they always step up throughout time.
Right. They get slower and slower. And you're due. It's been 5 years. You're due. But I think you will find this a worthy upgrade. But before you buy, make sure you can live with the keyboard.
Okay.
That's the big difference. The screen will be better. The speed will be better. I probably wouldn't get the i9 unless you need the ultimate in speed, but get the i5 or the i, because the i9 is hideously expensive. Get the i5 or the i7. But I think you'll be very happy. Apple has made a very nice product. It's just, as with all Apple products, it's designed for, you know, it's limited. It can't be everything to everybody.
Right.
That's just because there's only one manufacturer. In the PC world, with thousands of manufacturers, there is a form factor for everyone. But it won't run Mac OS, and I kind of like Mac OS. So, as I suspect you do too. So we're stuck.
Yeah, I do.
Hey, thanks for the call, Manny. It's great to talk to you.
All right, thanks a lot, Leo.
Have a good one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The website where everything we talk about, I put out links and so forth up on the website. That's techguylabs.com. That's free, techguylabs.com. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Ben in Houston. Hello, Ben. Thanks for hanging on.
No problem. I'm jealous about your vacation. I'm in a garage in Houston, and I think I'm about to melt like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Oh, man, the Gulf must be so humid and hot right now. Oh,
it's brutal. It's brutal. Oh. I'm out in my garage, Leo, because my router from AT&T, I've got the fiber service, which has been awesome.
Nice.
And I've got Eero's.
Okay.
And Eero's are amazing. I know they're a sponsor, and I'm not saying it just because of that, but seriously, I install them for people for a living.
Oh, do you really?
Are
you like an IT guy for hire? Is that what you do? Or
that's what I'm. IT gun for hire. IT nice. Gun for hire. That's me. Yes, sir.
Is that literally the name of your company?
No.
It would be a good name, though. What's the name of your company so people in Houston can know who to call?
It's called CompreTech.
Comper? C-O-M-P-E-R?
Yeah, because you got to have the word kind of computer in the name of your business.
Yes, you do.
Computer guy.
You're a person.
That's right.
And it's tech. CompreTech. Like it.
There you go. You figured it out.
So it's interesting. So you go around and, of course, it's really ironic. I mentioned this many times, but here we are. This kind of networking stuff used to be the province of like the elite IT guy at a business. Now we're all expected to understand routers and switches and channels and frequencies and all this stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, it got a lot easier when the Orbeez and the Plumes and the Velops and Eero's, which I consider my favorite, came out. And it's been smooth sailing until Friday of last week.
Uh-oh.
I got the call from the wife. You know, the Wi-Fi's not working. The kids.
This is your house?
Aren't coming through.
This is your house?
This is my house. So this is happening.
Yeah. Well, that's the irony. My wife does this to me, and it certainly galvanizes action. She's done this many times. Not since I got the Eero. She said, the Wi-Fi's not working. Maybe I should call Russell, our IT guy. And man, I said, you're married to the Chuck guy. How dare you? How dare you?
I said verbatim pretty much the same conversation.
But that's my job.
I should be able to fix this. This is embarrassing.
So what's happening?
Demoralizing.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
You don't have to tell your wife you called me. I'll provide the consultation secretly.
Between you and me, right? Just between us.
So, that's right, yeah.
There are two lights on the modem that I have, the modem router. It's the one that AT&T provides, not like Comcast where you can buy your own, which I'd love
to do. No, because UVerse is kind of different. You really have to use theirs, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a power light and a broadband light, both of which are on solid green.
Okay.
And they're supposed to be. And what's happening is that it's when I run a speed test. I don't know if that it's just coincidence, but I'll run a speed test in the Eero app, and all of a sudden the broadband light starts blinking green, and I can go out and reset it. And by what I mean is unplug and replug the router. And by router, I mean the AT&T router. The Eero, comes back online. Everything's happy, but inevitably it happens again and again. And
so the blinking green light to you indicates that the broadband's not working.
Exactly.
It's not like a network light that blinks when there's access.
Not an activity light.
It should be solid. Exactly right. It should be solid green. Okay.
On solid. And I've had them come out and replace that ONT little box, which is where the fiber turns into Ethernet. And they haven't replaced it, but they redid the fiber and they came out and they said, Ben, it's all good. And I said, well, I've tried everything. Why don't we maybe switch out the router and modem and the ONT? And they said, no, you don't need to do that. And now I'm kind of kicking myself. I wasn't more insistent because getting to the point, I have an Orbee, I have an Envelop. Like I'm pulling out all the stops here. I'm going to try these different pieces of equipment, but they all seem to be doing the same thing, which is making that broadband light start blinking green.
And that's interesting.
Scratching my head.
So is that UVerse modem, is it also a router or is it just a modem?
It is a modem router combo.
Okay. And the Eero will work in bridge mode as a secondary device behind somebody's router, but it prefers to be the router. You don't have any choice on that. You can't make the UVerse equipment act as merely as a modem. You can't turn off the routing.
There's some way, according to the Eero's website, where you can maybe call AT&T and maybe they can walk you through it. I gave up on that long time ago.
Because that would be ideal. Eero, in order for Eero to do a lot of its advanced features, it needs to be the router.
Correct. Yep.
You know that. Now, I'm looking at AT&T's documentation of their U-verse router. They say, as you say, flashing green is not, you know, that means it's restarting. So it sounds as if it's crashing the router and restarting it.
Yes, that sounds reasonable. I'm on board.
Yeah. If it's green, the gateway's powered on. If it's flashing green, the gateway is starting. If it's amber, there's a software update in progress. If it's red, it's malfunctioning. So it never gets to amber or red, though. It just flashes green. Does it stay flashing green for a while?
It'll stay like that until I come out and, you know, put my computer man hat on and start unplugging and replugging.
Reboot it.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
That's interesting. It's been my experience, and actually, I don't have an answer for you, but we can all work together maybe to find an answer, that when I tax the router, like really hard, like for instance, a speed test, which downloads a 50 megabyte file and then uploads a 10 megabyte file to test the speed, and it's you know, solid throughput, I feel like something gets hot and overheats, and it sometimes causes both routers and modems to get flaky. And I wonder if that's the issue, in which case the only thing you could do is to say to AT&T, I need a newer one. This one is on its last legs. Whenever I do high throughput, it restarts the router. It restarts the modem. And that's,
It's funny you mention that. I have it. Like I said, I'm out here sweating up a storm. I put the enclosed, you know, media.
It's hot.
Whatever you call it.
Yeah.
In my garage. My garage is an air conditioner. That box, I put a thermometer in there because I was thinking
it
maybe.
It gets really hot.
It's almost 100 degrees in the little box.
And yeah. Hang on for a second. I have to take a break, but hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, the heat is definitely, a bad thing. We were talking about the MacBook Pros earlier, and I did notice that when it gets to 100 degrees Celsius, it will throttle. It will never get above 100, that the whole machine, all the cooling, everything Intel does is designed to keep it from going above 100 Celsius. Now, yours is 100 Fahrenheit, but that's external, right?
According to some little sensor I put in, it's got it's that indoor-outdoor kind of thermometer. And I looked up the specs, and it says that the modem can operate at up to 107 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, it's right on the edge. Yeah, and see, the problem is what you'd like to know is what the UART, that's the serial chip, and the processor, what temperature they're at. Because if it's 100 outside, they may well be hitting 200.
Ooh, okay.
You know? So that's the issue, I think if you could get it, somebody's even saying just try sitting on its side. Changing the thermals might make a difference. Getting a fan to blow at it.
One better, Leo. Why don't I just, I've got a drill and I'm not afraid to use it. I'll just drill through the wall. I'll lose the beauty of the little box I created. We got some water during Harvey and we got to open the walls up and I put in this beautiful box that all the wires come in.
Oh, I bet it's really hot in that box.
It is. I didn't think about that. You don't think about these things. That's why I'm not in construction, because I'm not thinking about this. Well, let me try it inside, Leo.
Try it inside, or even just put a little fan on that box. Just like you have a fan on your PC case, right? Just put a little muffin fan on there, just to keep the circulation going and see if that helps. It sounds to me, from what you've described, given that it happens when you're doing, you're exercising it hard, that it starts to get blinking, which sounds like it's rebooting. It might really be indicating, I'm too hot.
Do you think that a replacement from AT&T, I mean, that seems like the next logical step.
Well, that's, that, of course, as the equipment gets older, it does get less robust, less robust. It gets more sensitive to heat.
Right.
So I would just don't even tell them what's going on. Just say, hey, look, this thing, it's blinking green every time I really do a lot of throughput. I think I need a new one.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see if you can get a new one. That might just fix it.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, well, keep your fingers crossed for me.
I will. That's a pain in the butt, especially for the Comper Tech guy.
It's not something I need to be advertising, that even the
Comper Tech guy has.
Network.
Somebody said, why do you have all these technical problems, Leo? You're the tech guy. It's because I'm the tech guy, right? We push the envelope.
what's the expression that the cobbler's kids have no shoes?
Yes.
Why isn't my internet working?
That's right.
Like, I'm busy making shoes for everyone else.
My poor wife. But actually, the Eero did help us. But I do notice that it's the plume I can overheat. The Eero doesn't overheat, but I can overheat the plume. And when I do, throughput goes kabooey. It really is interesting.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad I called you.
All right, Ben.
I was going to basically rewire the house, and I'm not going to do that anymore.
Don't do that.
Thank you.
At least not first. Do the easy
Have
stuff
a good
first.
Afternoon.
All right. Take care, Ben. Bye-bye. Right. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am. Wow. Where are you?
Can you hear me okay?
You sound great. It's quiet where you are. And
I can't, okay. I can't, I'm in an airport.
I can tell.
Guess the one.
Look at that. We'll have to guess the airport. Let me go full screen on you. Maybe the audience. Boy, that looks very nice. It kind of looks like the airport in South Korea. It looks like Incheon. Is it Incheon?
You are wrong.
Wait. Let me see that sign. Polo. Oh, it's a Ralph Lauren shop. Never mind. I thought it was Poyo. What is... I don't know. It's a nice-looking airport. It's obviously an international airport because you've got those escape routes. And there's something on fire. Holy cow. Is that... Oh, hold on a sec. We're going to have to guess on the air. High in my is my low. I don't know when a muck-a-mac. With me you can ride. It's in a cabin. Sending that inside. Ba-ba-da-ba-doo. Listen. He's traveled every land. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy, our traveling guru, helps you travel better with technology each week on the show. And hello, Johnny. You're obviously I think it looks like you're in San Quentin. Are you in prison, Johnny? He's frozen. He's not moving. There he is. Now you're moving again. Where are you?
My internet cut out for a second.
Yes.
Did you figure out where I am?
Well, I thought at first, I mean, it's obviously an airport, although San Quentin's a good second guess. I'm going to, I thought you were in Incheon. You're in the South Korean, Seoul, South Korea airport.
No, other side of the world. I am in Miami airport.
Oh, very nice. Polished
that's
floors.
Why that's why I have my sweatshirt on because it's
Ralph
freezing.
Ralph Lorenzo. It's freezing.
They always have the AC pumping because it's 90 degrees outside.
That was the giveaway. He's wearing a fleece. I should have known. That means you're in Florida.
Yes.
That's awesome. Where are you on your way to visit Dad, or what are you doing?
Actually, I just can't see him. And so I've talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I bought these tickets from LA, Miami, Puerto Rico, 365 lie flat seat. And they're still available. I just checked just a few hours ago.
And I think I was on that flight from Miami to Puerto Rico because it was like a 777. It was a very nice, or 747. It was a very nice plane. And I was surprised they were flying such a big plane for such a short flight. What airline is that? Oh, he's frozen again. So he's on airport internet, which means, as with all Wi-Fi, periodically it stops to let somebody else talk, which means Johnny's not going to move for a minute or two. And then he's going to come back and finish the sentence. Or not. You know what? Maybe not.
Call the hotline again.
Did he call the hotline before?
Yeah.
Oh, I should have answered it. Why don't you call him on the phone and see if we... Oh, he started moving again.
I'm trying that right now.
No, you're moving again. Keep going.
Oh. You know, I was trying to call your hotline, but it was trying to do it through Skype. I'll do it through the hotline.
No, it rang, but I turned the ringer off because I didn't. I couldn't answer the phone. I was on the radio. All right, now we'll try him. Let's see. I see you on the hotline. Here you go. Wait a minute. Can I pick up? Hello, are you there, Johnny? Let me pick up. Hello, Johnny.
I'm clearly on weak internet. I apologize.
That's okay. I was just, it's actually a good demonstration of the problem with Wi-Fi for internet telephony is that Wi-Fi is polite. So when a Wi-Fi signal is interrupted by another Wi-Fi signal, it will stop and wait a random amount of time and then come back. And that's exactly what we were seeing. You were freezing for a random amount of time and then come back. But see, it was going to happen again. But the phone doesn't do that. So continue on.
So I was telling you about the $365 fares are still there. L.A., Miami, San Juan. The trick is you have to book it L.A., San Juan. But you want to do the 777 that's between L.A. and Miami.
Is that American? What airline is that?
American Airlines.
Yeah, I was on that flight. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and on the one to Puerto Rico is a 767.
So you're on your way to Puerto Rico.
I can't tell you where I'm going, but and so.
But you bought a ticket to Puerto Rico. You're not going to do that thing which will get you banned for life, where you get off the plane and you don't do the second leg. You're not going to do that, are you?
No. I don't do that. The hidden city trick.
Hidden city trick.
That is when you buy a ticket like that and you get off and you only buy one way tickets and you buy a carry on only.
Yeah, because if you get a round trip, they'll cancel the second leg, so that's no good. If you check bags, they're going on whether you get off or not. And if you're in a points club with that airline, they may very well boot you out for doing that. They don't like it.
No, they do not like it. So you got to go to Puerto Rico.
I'm not sure why they don't like it. By the way, they got their ticket.
I don't either, because I'm buying tickets all the time and I end up canceling them. For whatever reasons, and so they're not refunding me. I'm losing my money. So
I don't understand why they don't like it. They actually save money because they don't have to pay for fuel to fly you. That seat sold. Right. It's not like somebody else could take that seat. I mean, maybe that's it. They figure, well, if you're not going to take it, we could sell it to somebody else for twice as much. I don't know.
No, because L.A. Miami first class on that same flight is $1,600.
That's why they want to make you pay
$1,600. That's competition.
Yeah,
exactly.
Go to San Juan. Puerto Rico's gorgeous. I love Puerto Rico.
You don't have to twist my arm, buddy.
I'm actually, believe it or not, I mentioned earlier that Lisa wants to go to the Apple store because she wants one of them new MacBook Pros, and it's right next door to a fabulous Puerto Rican restaurant. So we're going to the Puerto Rican restaurant for fried plantains and chicken adobo, and then we're going to go get a MacBook Pro. So that's my hot date for Saturday night.
There's nothing wrong with that. So actually, I have an interesting quick tip. I was about to get on the plane the other day from L.A. to Miami, and just before I boarded, I was going through my mental checklist twice, second time, and I realized I forgot my computer cord. And I have a HP New Spectra, and I was like, are you kidding me? I cannot travel without my laptop. That's where I do all my work.
Right.
And it was too late for my wife to come drop off my cord, and I don't have a backup. I used to have a backup with my other computer, but this thing has a tricky plug.
See, that's why I no longer buy computers with tricky plugs. Only buy, in the new MacBook Pros like this, the new HPs are like this, something that uses Type-C charging, because that's generic, and you can get that anywhere. Cheap.
Okay, the Type-C charging.
Write that down. Only buy computers with Type-C charging. Phones, computers, everything now has Type-C, which means I always have Type-C chargers with me.
Gotcha. So what I did is, I went into the counter at the gate and said, listen, are you oversold? Because I was trying to make lemonade out of lemon, saying, maybe I can make some money instead of losing money.
Yeah, give me $400 to kill this flight. Yeah.
Yeah, but the agent said, you know what, we're okay, but he appreciated it. And I said, you know what, to tell you the truth, I forgot something at home. Is there any way you can put me on a later flight? And normally they don't, but because I was nice, and also I had a first class ticket, he said, you know what? Sure, and he did it. So,
that's nice.
The takeaway is to always be nice to the gate agents.
Always be nice. Yeah.
Always to everybody, but especially the gate agents.
Because they hold your life in the palm of their hands.
They do.
I always am nice to people who hold my life in the palm of their hands or other parts. So what do you usually come here armed with a website and an app. Do you got something for us?
I do. Yeah, sure do. So I have a website called College Nannies and Sitters and Tutors. It's an app and a website. So, you know, my wife and I, when we travel, we still have not been able to, put Jack in someone else's hands. But one of our colleagues really highly suggested this company. It's been around since 2001. They're in 31 different states. So when she travels, she, for business, she has a nanny or a sitter come to her hotel and babysit. And she said it's a girl. They've never let her down. She uses it all the time. And so that's why I'm ready to do it.
The college part is they're all college students. Is that the idea? Or?
Yes. I mean, that's what it appears to be. Especially in the summertime, they said. But, you know, they're all throughout the whole year. But, you know, And
it's U.S. And it's U.S. only, right? It's not international.
Only U.S. Only 31 states. They're not international.
Okay. Nice though. That's a useful. Be careful typing it, because if you type college nannies and you want to make sure you do the whole thing. collegenanniesandtutors.com, or you might get something unexpected.
I'll tweet it and I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. Carefully type that one.
Or the chat room. I'll put it in the chat room.
So that's an app and a website.
Okay. Yeah, that is. It's on Android and on iPhone.
Nice. Well, you know what? I'm going to let you off the hook then, because we're out of time anyway. And are you getting on a plane or did you just get off?
I'm getting on.
All right. Have a safe flight.
Thank you.
And go wherever you're going. And then everybody should follow him on johnnyjet.com and Twitter and Instagram and figure out where he is.
That's right.
Safe travels, John. Make sure you have your charger with you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Johnny. That worked out. You know, it was kind of fun. I kept the video up. And, of course, it didn't freeze once. But that worked out. It's not as good quality, but it's nice that we have a backup. So that's good.
Yeah, I heard it stirring a little bit right before I went on. So I quickly put you on speed dial. And
Very smart. So very smart. I appreciate it. So you're going. It looks like you're going alone, right? You're not taking Natalie and Jack, or are you?
Yeah, they're home. Oh. And my mother-in-law's there.
Oh, nice. And this is a short trip.
Oh yeah, I try to do all short trips.
You'll be back home before they know it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, have fun, and thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right. Take care, Johnny. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Studio 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number on the line from San Gabriel, California. We got Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Leo. How are you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
Oh, good. Listen, I got a Amazon Fire HD 8 with 32 gigabyte.
Yeah.
What I have on the phone is I have my Solitaire, Sudoku, and my Yahtzee.
Yeah.
I wanted to change it to that so I could free my phone, but I don't see a way unless I got them through Google Play, all the...
So what you do on the Amazon Fire, it doesn't come, as you've noticed, with the Google Play Store. This is actually an interesting story. The Amazon Fire tablets are Android, but they're... Uh-huh. So in order to understand how they could be Android, you have to understand that Android originally wasn't a Google product. It was created by a company called Android,
right?
Sold to Google, and it was open source. That meant that and Google has kept it that way. That means anybody can go online, download the code for Android, and put it on any device they want. Many people do. But that's called the open version of Android, the Open Handset Alliance version, OHSA.
Right.
That, however, doesn't include any of the Google stuff. Most importantly, the Google Play Store or Google Chrome or, you know, any of the Google apps.
Mm-hmm.
You can, however, on the Fire, download the Google apps, but you have to know how to do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't come with it, but Google, truthfully, doesn't mind... You know, in fact, if you think about it, it's in their interest that you get the Google Play Store because they make money every time you you pay for an app there. So it's possible to install the Play Store on the Fire tablet. And it basically involves two things. First of all, turning off the setting that says only download stuff from the Amazon store. That setting is an important setting because it protects you. It keeps you from downloading stuff from sketchy app stores. So it is a setting available in all Android devices, including the Google devices. And by default, it's switched on.
Okay.
So the first thing you have to do is and that's getting apps from another store is called sideloading. So the first thing you have to do is go into settings and security and say enable the apps from unknown sources. Now, my suggestion is once you do this, turn it back on. It's a good thing to have. It'll protect you.
Now, when I bring the screen down from that gives me the I'm on Belkin 220UC router right now, so I'm getting the signal from that.
Yep.
It shows Bluetooth, airplane mode, blue shade, and that do not disturb and help. Nothing shows me anything.
Go to the settings in your tablet.
Okay. How do I get into the settings of the tablet? This is brand new to me.
Yeah. And it is a little challenging because it doesn't actually look like Android at all. So it is a little challenging. Yeah, you see it in the carousel there?
Yeah, hold on a sec.
It's in the carousel.
Okay, settings. Okay.
Yep. And then there's a security tab.
Security.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I don't want to take the time to walk you through it, but you'll find it. And then enable in apps from unknown sources. Then that's step one. Then step two is you've got to find the unknown sources. And there's four things you need. You need the Google account. I mean, actually, this may change because Google's always fiddling with this. But as of a few months ago, and I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com that gives you the links to this. You get it from something called APK Mirror. APK is the name of an Android app. It's an APK. And APK Mirror is... You want to be very careful doing this, downloading APKs from random. People can download malware. But in this case, APK Mirror is a trusted source. But be very careful. You're going to need four things. Google Account Manager, Google Services Framework, Google Play Services, and then finally you can install the Play Store. This can be a little tricky depending on which version of the Fire tablet you have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to put a link in our show notes from a site called the How To Geek that gives you step-by-step what I just described and the links to the actual files you need. And so follow that fairly carefully. You want to do it in that order. You want to, in other words, treat it like a cookbook recipe. Don't deviate, and you should be fine. Once you have the Play Store on there, then uncheck that box because it's unsafe. But the Play Store also will have that, you know, protection. You should only get stuff, ideally, you should only get stuff from the Amazon store and the Play Store. Both of those stores are carefully vetting, somewhat careful, not 100% carefully, but carefully vetting their stuff and making sure you don't get malware on there. And you really want to be careful. As with, you know, this is true of all computing devices. Be very careful about where you get them, you know, where you get your software from. Don't download software from random sources or just because there's a link on your screen that says, hey, you need the new flash. Don't just say, oh, okay, that must be true. You got to be careful about this stuff because that's exactly how malware gets on your system. And there is a lot of malware on the Android platform, and that is an Android device. This is why Google, by the way, got fined $5 billion just last week by the European Union. Because the European Union said, hey, you can't require companies. So there's a couple of things Google does. One, if you make a phone with official Google, not the open source, Open Handset Alliance version of Android, if you license it from Google, which you have to do, you cannot make a phone that doesn't have the licensed stuff. You have to choose one or the other. Amazon, notice, doesn't offer any phones with official Google services. They picked the Open Handset Alliance version. That's one. The other one is they were paying some companies to put the Google apps on there. That's two. And then a third thing that they don't like is they bundle the Play Store and Chrome on there. And I don't think bundling the Play Store and Chrome on there is so bad. That's what people want. Look what our caller wants to do, right? He got a Fire tablet. He says, but I want the Play Store on there. So I'm not convinced that the EU was right to fine Google $5 billion. Google's appealing that, but they're going to have to change their behavior as a result. I think Google should be praised, frankly, for offering Android for free. I think that's there are literally thousands of handsets and very inexpensive handsets available thanks to Google giving away a free operating system. Amazon's benefiting. Amazon's a big competitor of Google's, but they benefit. I don't know how that's anti-competitive behavior. You could make a case, I guess, that Google, by giving away, this is a stretch, but by giving away Android for so many years, prevented anybody else or discouraged anybody else from creating a phone operating system to compete with Google. It's just right now, and basically it's Google, it's Android and iOS. Those are the dominant operating systems. It's not like, I mean, that's the argument, that they dumped Android. They gave away Android so that nobody would write something different. And in fact, it's worked. If that's if that was their evil plan, it did work. Android is completely dominant worldwide. Has 75% of the market in Europe. That's why the EU was coming down on them. They're basically a monopoly. All right, I'm going to take a break because it's time for news at the top of the hour. We will come back. We will answer more calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion, and don't forget, again, the website, very useful. I can give you that recipe, for instance, for putting the Play Store on your Android device. That's all at techguylabs.com. Free, no sign up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and updating your Google Play Store on your Amazon Fire tablet. You know, no, I've just been running through it here. I have a, I don't know how old this Fire tablet is. It's, you know, the nice thing about the Amazon Fire tablets, they're very inexpensive. They're basically an ad for Amazon. But because they don't come with, you know, the Google stuff, you know, that's probably why they're less expensive. And I think it's why a lot of people say, well, I would really like to have the Google Play Store on here, right? So that's the question. Can you get the Google Play Store on here? And as far as I can tell, it's a fairly easy thing to do. I've actually been walking through it on this older tablet. You start by, actually, I'd love to just put regular Android on here because this is basically a big ad for Amazon, right? But that's why they're so cheap. Amazon's subsidizing the thing. But what I did is I followed the step-by-step from the How-To Geek. It's really only five steps, I guess, if you include the four different files you need to download. Step one is to say, yeah, you can download files from an unofficial source. Step two is to go to a reliable unofficial source, the APK Mirror, and download the four things you need, the Google services that run in the background, and then finally the Play Store. And I've done all that, but I don't know if the Play Store is running. So that's another issue. And maybe you'll find that there are different versions you have to run and that kind of thing. So let me just update everything on the device. Then I'll go to the Play Store, and if I have to, I can update that. But then you've got, you know, you've got actually a pretty good, inexpensive Android device. And I don't know how Amazon feels about it. There's not a lot of love lost between Google and Amazon. Notice Amazon, when you search for a Google Home device, doesn't offer you a Google Home device. They say, oh, no, you'd prefer an Echo. You want to get one of ours. Nevertheless, I don't think they actively discriminate against Google on this thing. Maybe they do. I don't know. You tell me. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's go to Yankee Town, Florida. David on the line. A lot of Yankees in Yankee Town. Is that the name?
Yeah, there sure are, Leo.
All right.
All Yankees.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Thank you. I have a MacBook that I've had for about a year now. And shortly after I got it, when I start to type, or when I'm typing a document or an email, the cursor just jumps to a random place on the document.
That's annoying.
And real annoying. And it's gotten worse. It's gotten now where I have a hard time getting through one email without two or three jumps.
Yeah.
And not only does it jump, sometimes it executes a command.
No!
For instance, it opens up a new email message and puts an address in it. Or
wow! That could be really bad if it then pressed the send button. So yeah. Do you have a trackpad on this device?
Yes, it's the Mac. Well, it's built in the MacBook.
It's a MacBook Pro. Okay, I'm sorry, I heard Mac, but I didn't know which Mac. So So usually when that's happening,
MacBook.
Yeah, MacBook. It's what that's happening usually means the trackpad's faulty. Trackpads can do that just because there's a little schmutz on it. So the first thing I do is really make sure it's clean. But what I'm thinking is you're getting stray touches on the trackpad. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense.
It's as if an invisible ghost was tapping the trackpad and moving your cursor around for you. Now,
but I've had every MacBook or laptop Apple ever made and had trackpads and never had that happen before.
Well, it's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a built-in feature. So the MacBooks, and as do all Windows machines with trackpads, have built-in software that's called palm rejection that supposedly, when you're typing, it will ignore, because if you think about it, there's your hand right there and the trackpad's right under it, that will ignore trackpad input while you're typing. That palm rejection software may have been disabled or turned off. I don't think there's a setting on the Mac to turn it off, but you might check. But more likely what's happened is one of two possibilities. The one is easy, is just like a little schmutz on the trackpad that's sending a signal. The less exciting one is that there maybe is a short or a failure, in a physical failure in the hardware of the trackpad that's causing that. In either case, probably the best thing to do would be to bring it to the Apple store. How old is the MacBook?
About a year.
Yeah, so the about is important. If it's less than a year, it's under warranty. If it's more than a year, you might be paying for the fix yourself.
Okay.
The genius will have some advice, some sage advice for you. One other thing that you might want to try, and Scooter X in our chat room says sometimes this helps, is something called resetting the SMC. If you've had a Mac for a while, you know that there are some magic keystrokes. Remember the old days where you do Command-Option-PR to reset the parameter RAM?
Reset the param.
You remember that?
Many a time.
Well, that's still appropriate, and I wouldn't mind a couple of those. You Command-Option-PR and reboot, on reboot, and then wait for it to bong a couple of times. But then resetting the SMC can be valuable. The SMC is responsible for a lot of low-level stuff on the Mac, and sometimes can maybe be indicated in something like this. So there is an Apple tech note that will describe how to do this. We'll put that in our show notes at techguylabs.com. Your battery's non-removable, so what you do is you shut it down, and then get ready for this. Press Shift-Control. This is one of those magic voodoo things. Shift-Control-Option on the left side. Not on the right, on the left, Shift Control Option, and then turn on the power. Hold all of the keys, including the power button, for 10 seconds, and then release all the keys, and then press the power button again. Do this several times just in case.
I'm going to have to print that.
I know. That's why I'm going to give you the link. It's a support document from Apple, HT201295, or you can search for it. But it's resetting the SMC.
One other quick issue. On your advice, I purchased a VPN and a software VPN.
Okay.
And now I cannot sign on to many websites. And most importantly, all my bank won't let me sign on to the server.
Because bad guys often use VPNs to hide their location when they're trying to hack the bank. So
there's no way around that.
Just as what you have to do, and all VPNs will let you do this, is you can say, with the exception of this, don't block this or turn it off, go to the bank, and then come back. And the truth is, because you're on an SSL link, it's an excellent point, because disabling the VPN, if you're at that coffee shop and that bad guy that we talk about, the imaginary bad guy sitting there, the minute you disable the VPN, you're kind of sitting there. But just go to the bank and then turn the VPN back on. The bank is encrypted anyway because of HTTPS, secure HTTP, so he can't see your banking transaction. He would, however, be able to see that you're going to your bank, but he wouldn't be able to see anything else.
But it's safe to do that.
In fact, one of the reasons I don't always use a VPN is when you're doing secure transactions, the bad guy can't see inside that. That's Facebook, Gmail, your bank, Amazon, anywhere you're going. And more of the web is secure. In fact, as of the latest version of Chrome, Google is so hot on this, they call it HTTPS secure everywhere,
They're so hot on it that now on Google's browser, Chrome, if you go to a site that's not HTTPS, it'll flash a thing that says site insecure site. And starting in the fall, that thing will be red. So that's a lot of pressure on sites to fix this problem. And so more and more sites, all of our sites now are HTTPS. Doesn't mean you don't need a VPN. There's other reasons you might want to use a VPN, but it does eliminate the big loophole that people could see what you're doing. You're safe on your bank. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. We're going to take more of your calls in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, winding my way down to Geeky Street. 8888-ASK-LEO. Michael in Orlando, Florida. Hello, Michael.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I grew up.
You grew up where?
I grew up and grew old with you.
Oh.
Yes. I'm 65 now, and you're a bit younger than
me. I'm catching up.
But
you grew up with me. I don't know if I like that.
Well, I need help, Leo Juan Kenobi.
Yes, I'm going to help you. What can I do for you?
Okay, I got some Octane theater chairs, three that are curved. I got Samsung speakers, the 5.1.4.
Okay.
Now, I also got the Fire TV and the Apple TV. But I'm not sure what TV to get.
You got all that, but you don't have a TV?
No, I do have.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I want one on the wall.
You want a new one? So, yeah. So you've got all the accoutrement, but you don't have the centerpiece to all of this. And well, so you're ready to do 4K. It sounds like you've got all the 4K stuff, yeah?
Well, I had a 4K TV and a Vizio, and it went south on me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you like 4K? Did you appreciate it?
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I got the Apple TV.
Yep. If you got the new Apple TV, the 4K TV, you got the Roku Ultra. You said you have a Fire TV, if you have one of the newer Fire TVs.
The one that has Alexa on it, and I can say, turn on my TV. Please don't.
Yeah, the Fire Cube. You have the Cube. So yes. That's 4K also. But even better than 4K, honestly, and I love 4K. 4K is double HDR, so it actually is called Ultra HD. But even better than UHD, Ultra HD, is HDR, which is high dynamic range, and almost all the new TVs have HDR. That means that there is a broader range between the darkest darks and the brightest brights. HDR, in my opinion, even makes more difference in the quality of the display than 4K does. 4K, you'll only notice that if you're fairly close. But HDR, you'll see, and you may even not notice it immediately, but it gives it a much nicer look. Whenever possible, I watch 4K HDR. Yeah. So the TV I have, and it really depends on budget. The TV I have, which I'm very happy with, you probably already know since you grew up with me, is the LG OLED, the OLED. And I have a B6, which is the 2016 least expensive version.
I'm getting a brand new refrigerator from Samsung that had the display on it.
Okay.
So I'm really, and I actually got Samsung vacuum cleaner, you know, the Rumba Tug.
You have a Samsung. You're all Samsung, aren't you?
No, Apple, but I like these things.
Well, the Samsung makes, and Scott was talking about it earlier, they also make an OLED that you can get. Don't get you could get the QLED. The QLED, to me, is Samsung's attempt to confuse consumers, because Q looks like a lot like O, doesn't it? And if you just were kind of casually shopping, you might look and say, oh, there's an OLED for $1,000 less. But it ain't an OLED. It's an LCD, an LED backlit LCD using quantum dots. That's the Q. And QLED is, I don't think quite as good. It is if you want bright. So if you're going to watch the TV and you can't close the curtains and you're watching the daytime, then a QLED, the Samsung QLED, would be a very good choice.
I'm looking at the flame.
You're looking at the flame?
Flame, F-R-A-M-E.
Oh, you're looking at the frame. You don't like the bezels?
No, and I like it, the fact that I got a lot of artwork from work that they...
Oh, so you kind of want this to be like a painting hanging on the wall.
Yes, with all the other ones. But I also was looking at some of the... But it only come up to 65 inches. I currently have... The Vizio I had was 70 inch.
You want a 70 inch?
I actually want more.
You want more?
82 inch.
You want an 80 inch TV? Well, that kind of narrows 82. Down your choices a little bit, but there are some 80 inch TVs. I think Vizio is actually has a very nice one. Sony has a 77. An 80 inch.
Samsung has an
82. The QLED comes in 82, yeah.
Yeah.
So I would...
Go ahead.
I would look at the QLED, absolutely. $4,000 for the 82-inch. That's the Best Buy price. It's 4K, right. UHD, HDR. It's especially good in a brighter room, room you can't darken. I think that's
I like my room dark. But my husband, he liked to turn all the lights on.
Son of a gun. How dare he?
I know. I keep telling him that. Even though I had the huge light, he won't let me turn it down.
He doesn't make you watch TV with all the lights on, does he?
Yes.
Was he afraid of the dark?
No. He did think he shouldn't watch TV in the dark.
Oh, he's like me. His mother said, don't watch TV in the dark. Eyes. Yeah.
But it'll ruin your eyes.
Did you hear my conversation earlier with Scott about ambient light? It's a good idea. Get those Hue Go lights, put them behind the TV. It'll just kind of, and then you can.
I have that.
Well, you're set, man. You got it all. I would say get the Samsung. If you want 82, you don't have a lot of choices. That QLED is an excellent choice. Best Buy has it for $4,000, which I think is actually a pretty good price.
And then I have to get it wrong. Now, that comes with the One Connect.
Hold on a sec. I'm going to have to take a break. We'll come back with more. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You're just full of surprises, Michael. One more thing. What else now? What else?
Okay. It comes with the One Connect connection, right?
I don't know. You're saying one HDMI or no? It has
No. It has the box that is not connect. It connects.
Oh, that thing. Yeah, boy, I hate that on my Samsung OLED. Are they still doing that? I hate that.
Why?
Well, the advantage of it is that it makes the TV's thinner, right? Because all of the electronics are an external box.
And it's easy to connect everything. Then.
Yeah. So no, it's not. I don't know. I guess it's fine, and in theory it's upgradable, although they don't ever upgrade it. They never upgraded mine. But in theory, since all the electronics are external, it could be upgraded. It can be replaced if it goes bad. So, all right. I'm not against the One Connect. That's fine. I don't know if this new one does have the One Connect.
Yes, they do.
It does? Okay.
Now, what does it mean by to connect the speakers, which the Samsung speakers... With HDMI ARC.
You can use ARC, the audio return channel. And the only reason you want ARC is if the TV itself or the One Box is generating the content, then you need a way to get the audio from the TV into your stereo. I sound like an old school guy when I say that. Into your surround sound. So the best way and generally the way you do it is... with an optical cable. Do you have an AV receiver or do you have a sound bar?
It's going to be the Samsung HK950, which is a 4.1.4. 5.1.4.
It's a soundbar, though. And so the soundbar, some soundbars do support HDMI, ARC.
It does.
All right, then you're good.
And the TV, both of the TVs has that.
Usually what I do is I connect the soundbar via the optical cable from the TV. This is an Atmos. So do you have it yet?
I got it, but I'm going to connect everything because...
Oh, you don't have the rest of it yet. Yeah. That looks pretty sweet.
Best Buy, connect everything together.
You must be, Michael, you're obviously independently wealthy.
No, I just took refinanced my home.
Oh, you mortgaged your house for this home theater? Oh, my goodness. What's your husband think of that?
I paid off all my debt.
Oh, good for you.
I'm totally debt free.
Isn't that a nice feeling?
Yes, and I want to live comfortable. I'm 65. I'm still working. I enjoy working. But you know, I listen to at work. I do data entry. I listen to all podcasts.
Love you. I love you. Now, Michael, let me guess, because the way you said Woik, you're from New Orleans, aren't you?
No, but I love New Orleans.
You have a little Cajun in there.
Oh, yeah. I was there for over a month in May and June.
Well, where did you come from originally?
West Virginia.
Okay. I hear the West Virginia in there. Yeah. But you say Woik, and I thought, well, that's a little bit of a – that sounds like Dr. John, the night tripper there.
Yeah. But the first time I went to New Orleans, I got on the bus, and I couldn't – it was an old – Cajun guy.
Oh, I love that.
To help you. And I could not understand.
Oh, I know. It's a tough accent, isn't it?
And I said,
what language are you? Yeah.
And he was saying Elysian Field and St. Claude Avenue, but I had no idea he was saying that.
Well, I'm sure no one's told you you have an accent at all.
No, I have a speech impediment.
Oh, okay. But you do have a little West Virginia in there, too.
Oh, yes. After living here in Orlando for a couple of years, my parents came down for a visit, and I'm listening to my dad, and I'm going, he talks like he got lost in his mouth.
Hey, I have to run, Michael. It's great to talk to you. 8888 Ask Leo. On we go with the show. Before we go on, I just want to mention that Michael's is interesting because he started not with the TV, but with all the stuff, you know, this sound bar and the Fire TV and the Apple TV. But he has a point, because I think sometimes people go out and they buy a brand new TV and they say, oh, you know, we want the latest. We want, and pretty much you're stuck with it anyway, 4K UHD, and they really look good. And I highly suggest them. However, it really is probably a good idea to remember that the minute you buy that TV, you, my friend, are going to be subject to what I call the upgrade cascade. Because in order to supply 4K UHD video to that TV, you have to upgrade everything downstream from it, which means you're going to have to buy a new AV receiver or a soundbar. You're going to have to buy a new Roku. If you don't have the Roku Ultra, you're going to have to buy the new Apple TV with 4K support. You're going to have to buy everything needs to be 4K all along the chain. And I guess if you think about it, that's obvious, but it surprised me when I got my nice new, a couple of years ago, love it, LG OLED display. Oh man, I love this thing, 4K UHD. And I realized I had to get, including my AV receiver, everything new. Even the cables. I had to upgrade everything. So just keep that in mind when you budget. That you're not just getting a new TV. You're getting a new life. Line 3, Foster in Covina, California. Hi, Foster.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, man. Been a big fan for a long time. It's the first time I'm trying to call.
Well, welcome. It's about time. I've been looking for you. Where you been?
Well, I've been listening.
Good.
You know?
Well, that's a relief.
So I'll be real quick, man.
Sure.
I'm not super computer savvy, but, you know, I've had my iMac for several years, and I have, you know, Final Cut. I do a lot of editing, right?
Right.
So I get the, you know, the notification about upgrading and, you know, updating my operating system from Apple, and I usually pass them up, but I say, okay. I hit the button and upgraded to High Sierra.
Yeah.
And all of my programs, my editing and all my other stuff did not work.
No.
High Sierra does not run, you know, those programs.
Yeah.
And it, you know, giving me a thing to buy, you know, Final Cut 10 for $300. And I was just wondering, you know, I mean, it seems, you know, illegal, man, because I know there's millions of people and that, you know, have, you know, Final Cut 7, and to have to do that, you know, for them to say, oh, all your old stuff is dead. Now you have to, you know, spend more money.
And I wish they had been more clear ahead of time when you did the upgrade that this might happen.
Yeah.
Because starting with High Sierra. Now, by the way, the next version, Mojave, is going to be even worse. You're not going to be able to run 32-bit software at all. With High Sierra, it should have been able to run that older software, but give you a warning at the beginning saying, look, this is the last version of Mac OS that will run 32-bit apps. You may have apps that are so old that High Sierra can't run them at all. You're sure they're not running, or did you just get the warning?
No, they won't run.
They won't run. Yeah. So they must be really, really old. Theoretically, you can still use 32-bit apps with High Sierra, but Mojave is going to be the cutoff. So in some cases, you just need to update those apps. Most of those apps, you should update them, and they should work. Apps that are more than 10 years old may not work. And this is a real challenge. Oh, I'm sorry. Mojave's not the cutoff. The next one, Mojave will warn you, and then the next one will be the cutoff? All right. At some point, and this is Apple in a nutshell, and in a way, I celebrate it. It's the difference between Microsoft and Apple. Microsoft, with Windows, has had for years this very strong culture that we will continue to support everything that ever ran. If it ran on Windows... If it ran on Windows 95, it should run on Windows 10. There's a drawback to doing that. It's an interesting business strategy, and it really comes from Microsoft's belief that people who run Windows machines don't upgrade very often, and they're often running old. And really, the main purpose, because Windows are used mostly in business, or often used in business, is there a lot of line of business applications that just don't get updated. You know, a special realty or contractor software that was written in 1998 and hasn't been updated since. It's not unusual for people to be running that on stuff on Windows. And so Microsoft's really, but it's hard. Every time there's a new version of Windows, Microsoft has engineers, hundreds of them, dedicated to testing every app and literally writing custom code for those apps that don't work. Oh, well, I see that. So there's code. If you look in Windows, and it's one of the reasons Windows has become a bit of a hairball. There's code in there that says, oh, are you running Contractor Suite 1992? Well, then we better do this. And it's, you know, on the one hand, it's a great thing for users. Apple, completely in contrast, has been very quick and maybe some people say too quick to just abandon the old stuff. Say, you know, we don't. When they switched from PowerPC to Intel for a little while, they provided compatibility. But after a while, they said, no, we're not going to. You got to get a new program. So some of your stuff may be really old. It may be so old that, I mean, it must be really old. Most programs in the last 10 years should run fine on High Sierra. Couple of things you can do. Certainly seek upgrades for the stuff that you can upgrade. And in many cases, those upgrades won't cost a lot. Final Cut Pro 7 has been superseded by Final Cut Pro 10. I'm surprised it won't work. But the real problem you're going to face is that the user interface is dramatically different. And I can understand why you wouldn't want to. It's not just the $300. It's that everything has changed. And this was, this is very Apple-y. They were willing to cut off generation of Final Cut users and say, nope. And they did this with iMovie, by the way. They did it with Photos, iPhoto. Nope. We're going to start from scratch. The advantage is, unlike Windows, you don't have these, you know, you get modern programs that are faster and cleaner. The disadvantage is a lot of users are left in the dust and they don't want to spend the money. It's just the Apple way of doing things. I'm sorry to say. Even Microsoft has started to do that. You can't get Windows Movie Maker anymore. A lot of Microsoft software written in the days of Windows XP and Windows 7 are no longer available. Windows Media Center is gone. I think that most companies realize this is the only way to keep up with the future. You have my sympathy. There's no fix for this. You just have to get new versions of your programs. I think Apple should have warned you. But you got to move. Times change. You got to move forward. And that's the difference. Apple ended all support for Final Cut 7 in August of last year because they've moved to a new platform. Sorry. I apologize. I don't know what to say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You could go back. And in fact, this is an option for you. If you've got all the original install software, you can roll back from High Sierra. In fact, one of the best things to do would be to reboot your Mac and download from the network. And you'll get a choice of the original operating system that came with the Mac or the newest version that runs on that Mac. And you can go back in time. I understand your dismay. I do. Dickie D, hello.
Hello, Leo.
How are things?
Things are good. And you?
Very good. We're going to Tahoe next week.
Oh, what's out there?
There's a lake, I think, I'm told. I don't know.
Are you going just to see the lake?
Yes. I've heard there's giant bodies of water that are not the ocean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say there are giant bodies in the lake. I was going to say.
There may be.
Yeah, I know. That police force better get on the ball.
You never know with Lake Tahoe. It's a big lake. Yeah, we just thought we'd get a little getaway.
Oh, good. Okay.
I'll be back. And you and I are recording for our big vacation on the 18th.
On the 18th, correct. We're doing two extra spots.
I see that here on my
call sheet.
Good.
You know, speaking of Microsoft, I went on the other day and said, we've upgraded your Skype.
Oh, I know. This got a lot of people mad.
Oh, my God. It said, look at this. You can now type your messages in colors.
No!
And then I go, I say, well, wait a minute. I don't like this. Suddenly my camera's wide. Let me go up to just camera.
Nope.
Oh, it's gone.
No settings.
No settings anymore.
No settings.
No audio, no video, but you can type your swear words in color.
Woo! Oh, boy. Well, I don't know what to say.
Well,
it's a problem for all our hosts. They're all suffering.
Yes, well, I went and found classic Skype, and I put it in, and I'm getting warnings constantly. This version of Skype will soon be turned off.
Wow!
But at least I got my commands back for a while.
Wow. Yeah, I think they're gonna. I think they are kind of back patching in stuff that they took out. I hope
that would be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, I have to clean all my apartment. This way, I only have to clean a 2-foot square that you see.
It is rather wide. I didn't realize that's why it's so wide, huh?
Yes.
Wow. Where can I buy a 2 terabyte flash drive for $5? Captain J wants to know. At Wish?
Yes.
Apparently, that's an in-joke.
Yes.
The late, great Donna Summer. Never mind. The late, great Thelma Houston. Never mind. She's still with
us. Don't leave me this way.
Forget it. Don't leave me this way. That's it.
Leave me this
way. Oh, my. Sorry, Thelma. I didn't mean to prematurely kill you off. Ladies and gentlemen, that disco sound can mean only one thing. It's time to dance on the Tech Guy Show. Dick DiBartolo is here at Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz because he's a wizard of gizmos. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I'm doing great. And we play your disco music because you're a dis. There we go. Oh, because you're a disco guy. Yeah. You and I are wearing the disco shirts.
We are.
We're ready.
But you don't.
You know, this fabric, it doesn't breathe. But if you better stay away from open flame because it will melt. In that heat that you're suffering in New York City and all over the country this week, man. My mom says she's melting in Rhode Island.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah. She's just turned the air conditioning on high and stays in bed all day. So what can I do for you, Dickie D?
All right. So I had a little problem, and I found a $5
gadget. $5
gadget? That I like a lot. Now, you probably know about these, but if you don't, so I bought an HP computer monitor.
Yeah.
And I wanted it as close to the back wall where my desk is as possible.
Yeah.
For some strange reason, the HDMI cable comes directly out the back.
Ugh.
So by the time you put the cable in there and then have enough turn for the cable to go off to the right, it's like almost 3 inches from the wall.
You know what you need?
Oh, do you already know what they are?
You need like a little elbow joint.
Oh, do they make little elbow
joints? They make little elbow joints.
That you can have the cable go in any direction you want.
Oh, that's a pivoting elbow joint.
Oh no, you buy it. You buy it 90 degree, 270. Years ago, there was a company that made a rotating. And I said, you know, I had it in the warehouse. And I plugged it in and I turned it once and
it stopped working.
It stopped working.
Because they had the plug rotates, so they forgot to rotate the cable, too.
The cable.
So you just ripped the thing right out. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think their instructions did say, rotate just once and never touch it again.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh,
so man. Then I like that. And later on, I needed another cable. And I'm searching cables. And I go, you know what? Does anybody make cables where the connector is already built in at 90 degrees?
Oh.
And yes, indeed, there's a company that does. And the cables, I don't know how good they are, but they're terribly
Well, there's a recommendation.
Well, I'm using it.
Oh, it's working.
It's working
fine. Well,
that's fine.
That's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have the 90K TV like you. You know, I have a 3.5K because you had warned me if I get a 4K, I would have to replace everything else.
Yes.
So I said to the guy, I can't
go
4K.
Yeah, yeah.
He said,
yeah.
Give me 3.8.
I don't want to go the whole way. No.
Exactly. So Cable Creations makes these other cables that already come with the angle built in, and they come in 3, 6, and 15 feet. And that's what I needed. I needed a 15-foot cable. And it works fine.
Very, very nice.
Right now, my TV set, my HP monitor is almost flat against the wall.
Yeah.
About half an inch out.
Now, where did you get this one?
Although I got both of them on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're both on my website.
Amazon. Well, there you go. Go to gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.biz. Click the button that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy. And you will find the page where all the things he mentions on the show, all of them are there, and including the wet head, the soggy doggy, the watermelon smash, the arcade one-up, and now the cable creation left angle 90-degree 4K HDMI 2.0 cable.
Exactly.
It's all there, my friends. And when you go there, you should also take advantage of the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine for identifying what is obviously the light that goes on the hood of a police car, or is it?
Good.
But see, the problem is...
I cannot comment.
We don't have a sense of size or scale. You do this close-up picture, it could be the size, you know, of a pig's knuckle. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Yeah, it could be an observatory in Central Park.
Oh, Who knows? It could be. It could be gigantic. We don't know. That's the fun of it. Go to gizwiz.biz for a chance to play the game. And don't forget, Dickie D has a great podcast, all his own. It's every
week. Well, I share it with Mr. Chad Johnson.
Yeah, the old redhead.
Yes.
Gizwiz.
The natural redhead.
Yes. It's a natural color of clown red. Dickie D, a pleasure as always. Thank you so much.
Okay, buddy. Yeah, and, I'll see you next week.
We'll catch you next week. We're going to keep recording after the show ends. It's going to be over in a few minutes. I'll take one more call. But if you're on the line, hang on the line because I will get to everybody. We're recording ahead for vacation purposes next month. Tom on the line from Riverside, California. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Leo. I've got an issue with trying to copy some stuff off the YouTube. And I'm, you know, I use a computer at the library, and I really don't have any real knowledge about computers.
Normally YouTube is designed for streaming only. They don't want you to download stuff. And sometimes the people who make the videos prefer that you watch on YouTube. Certainly YouTube does, because then they can put the ads in and so forth. But guess what? Turns out you can. Now, this might be a challenge on a library computer, not because you need to download software. You don't. There are a number of YouTube downloaders that are very easy to use that just basically will download the video instead of playing it. And many of them are free. One way to do it is YouTube-DL. And actually, this is very clever because you take the YouTube link. Actually, let me see, though, if you have to install. Yeah, YouTube-DL.org will explain how to do this. You take the YouTube link and you add. Oh, no, you don't want this. This, you have to download this. You can't modify the library computer. What's the one that lets you just change the YouTube URL and it'll automatically download it? Chat room, you'll remember this. There's TubeSock. There's a lot of ways to do this. The problem with the library computer is now it's on the library computer's hard drive. How do you get it home? And some libraries will let you do this. Some won't. If you bring in a USB key, one of those thumb drives, if the library hasn't glued the USB port shut, which, frankly, if I were the library, I would do. You can just put the thumb drive in and copy it to there. Do they let you do that in your library?
You know, I don't even use a thumb drive because I'm not that far along, you know.
Well, you need something to take it home. You can download it, but you got to put it on something, right?
Let me explain something. This was no problem 3 years back and for 8 years. And I'm not copying a video. I'm just still framing tables or
pictures
of things.
You're screenshotting it. I get it. Yeah, the librarian may have disabled it. Security is a big issue with a lot of these things, so I would ask the librarian. They may have turned that off. Leo Laporte, the E-Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. The one of the links is YouTubeMP4.to. We'll let you copy the whole thing. But so you were pressing the screenshot key on the keyboard to do that?
Well, I just go to the print.
Print screen.
The print screen, and it was always, I could copy it at any time, I just stop the video and copy a frame.
And then you'd get the file and email it to yourself or something like that?
No, you don't have to do it. You print it out.
Print
it off on the printer.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can't do it anymore. It doesn't matter what library I go in. It's three or four. They all stopped about two, 3 years ago, you couldn't do that anymore. You couldn't. If you stop the video and you go to print, what you'll see is for that frame, it'll just be blank. There won't be nothing there. There won't be any picture there. So you can't copy. You can't copy it. Now some people they can if you go and put it on your your desktop and you save it to there and then go back and pull it up and copy it. I think you can do that if you know how. You know, I mean, it's not that complicated. It's very simple if you know what you're doing. But I don't really know.
I wonder. So I'm trying this right now. You're talking about a Windows computer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying this right now. Okay. Let me just press function key print screen, and I've got the snipping mode, and I'm going to just snip that screenshot from the YouTube thing. Well, I was able to do it. So I'm wondering if that's, again, something that the libraries... YouTube has not disabled this feature. So let me look at it again. So instead of printing the whole screen, I just want to get this part of this video. I got a little YouTube video. I want this thing. I've paused the video. I press... On this is a laptop, so I press function key print screen. And then the snipping tool is going to come up. And I'm going to say, yes, I want a new snip, and it's going to be... this right here, so I just get the screen, and then it says, yep, and now I have it, and now I can save as, or you said you print it, but I should, yeah, capture.png. So it's all of this is working still. My guess is that the libraries may have disabled this, and they certainly can, and I can print it as well. So try this. Instead of full screen, try the snipping tool, which is on my computer, and this may vary different computers, but I press the function key and the print screen button, and it pops up a program called this that's on Windows called the snipping tool. This is on Windows 10.
Snipping tool, okay.
Yeah. And then I can say, I just want to cut, and that's probably what you want anyway. You don't want to print out the whole screen. You just
want
to print out.
No, I just want one frame. That's
one frame,
I just
want
the picture of the chart or whatever,
So you select it. It's now snipped, and I can print it, I can save it, I can email it, I can do anything I want with it.
Okay, I'll look at that.
That's the snipping tool. I think that's, if it doesn't work, that's because the library's probably got an email from Google saying, don't allow that!
Yeah, I'll do that, and I'll check with the tech guy at the library, and I'll
he should help you.
That'll be the next step, and I appreciate that, Leo.
He should help you.
That's
my pleasure.
Really
yep.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
All right.
And I just want to confirm that I was able to install the Play Store following those instructions. I did have to reboot. That makes sense to get those Google services running, but there's the Play Store. I can't get to it. but that's another problem. There's the Play Store, and now I'm able to download apps. And, yep.